Session number 12511, Neville Wood, part one.
You were telling me you come from Rottenstall.
Yes, that's right.
And were you born there?
No. Yes, sorry, I was born there, yes, sorry.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a butcher.
Was that his own business?
His own business, yes.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Chetham Collegiate in Manchester.
How old were you when you left?
16.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I worked for Imperial Chemical Industries.
What kind of a job was that?
I was in the accounts department.
What were you doing when war broke out?
Working in the office.
What did you feel like when you heard the news that war had been declared?
Well, let's get in there. Silly lad.
You were enthusiastic about it.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't it worry you at all?
Not really, no. I didn't really have much knowledge of it, so it didn't worry me.
You were born in 23. So
yeah, I was 18 then.
Or 16 if you were born in 23, I think.
Yeah. When the war broke out.
16 years old.
Oh, yeah. But I was 18 when I joined the army.
How did you go about joining up?
I volunteered.
But exactly what did you do? Go to a recruiting office?
Recruiting office and volunteered, yes.
In Manchester?
In Manchester.
What was your initial training like?
Oh, quite tough. It was 6 months. I was Royal Tank Regiment. And we did the usual wireless operator, gunner, driver courses to equip you for being a tank regiment soldier.
Had you always wanted to go in tanks?
I did do. Though I did have some reservations. We went on to the tank gunnery ranges down at Lulworth Cove. And they had some captured German armour there. And they were firing at them from about 1,800 yards. When I saw what damage the guns did, I began to have some second thoughts, because the holes in them were quite big. And of course, as you know, a shell goes into a tank and it splits up into fragments, thousands of fragments. So I began to have some reservations about that.
Could you do anything about it?
Not really. I just trained and became a wireless operator gunner.
How did you join SOE?
Well, I knew a chap actually was in SOE, and he gave me some information. So I wrote off to London, and I went up to Oxford for some evaluation tests, and was accepted.
Who was the chap who had the SOE contact? Can you remember his name?
I can't, never really, no.
What did he tell you about it?
Well, he just told me what, you know, there were groups of men who were going into enemy-occupied territories and working against the Germans. Or the Italians.
Did that appeal to you?
It did, yes. Because there was an element of freelance about it which appealed to me.
How did you go about transferring from the tank corps to SOE?
Well, with volunteering, my name was put forward, and SOE finally sent through a signal saying they accepted me, and that was it. Goodbye, tanks. Hello, SOE.
Where did you have your interview?
Oxford. But whereabouts in Oxford, I've no idea now.
In one of the colleges?
It may have been. It was something like that.
Do you remember what happened at the interview?
Well, there was a major interview, and then there was a psychiatrist. It was a day-long interview. So so I was quite involved. Then I went back to my unit, and about 3 weeks afterwards, SOE said, yes, come along and join us. So I went up to... I joined SOE and went up to Hendon and Thames, which was an SOE training place. I did a few weeks training there, then I went to Milton Hall near Peterborough.
What kind of training did you do at Henley on Thames?
Radio signals and unarmed combat and German army organisation, stuff like that.
Was the radio work that you did very different from that you'd done in the Royal Tank Corps?
Well, it was the equipment was different, but of course Morse code is Morse code wherever you go.
In what way was the technique so different?
Well, there were suitcase sets. What they call B2 suitcase sets. Whereas in the tank, they fitted in the tank. And there were short wave sets. Whereas the tank sets were mainly long wave sets.
How did you find operating the suitcase radios?
Quite simply, easy really. Well, you had a power supply and a good aerial.
Any hitches with them?
No, I can't think of any. Because they were quite good sets. About that big.
About what kind of speed were you able to do?
Well, I did about 32 words a minute. The only trouble was the sets were in either a blue suitcase or a brown one. You couldn't have any different colours. So you could be stood on a railway station in France and be carrying a blue suitcase, and you could look round and see another chap with the same suitcase. They're a bit... I used to think they stood out a bit.
Were they heavy to carry?
They were fairly heavy, probably about 30 or 40 pound.
So you couldn't carry them very far without resting?
Well, you could, but you didn't really aim at carrying them far. Because if you're going any distance, you'd try and get them picked up and taken by somebody in a car or a truck.
Do you remember who instructed you on the suitcase sets?
No, I don't really know. No, I can't remember.
Who was with you in your party? Do you remember any of their names?
You mean which party do you mean?
The group who were with you being trained at Henley on Thames.
Oh, well, there was Jack Grinham and Ron Brealey and John Sharp and Arthur Dallow and probably about 40 odd people.
What about the unarmed combat? Can you tell me what that involved?
Well, just like unarmed combat. It's quite hard, really. You know what that was, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, it was quite hard, really. We used to go, every week, we used to go for a two-run walk of 6 2/3 miles. We used to have a Bergen rucksack on our backs. And before we started, they used to drop a £60 sandbag in it. And off we used to go. And Jack Grinham one day said, we put a bag in my burger, he wasn't ready. So we put two in. He was a big lad. And we went off and we did this 6 2/3 miles. And when we finished, he said, my God, he said, the burger got heavy and heavy, step of the way. He's a big chap, though. He's about 6'2" and very well built, ex-sergeant of police. And when he found out he'd been carrying two sandbags, he was really upset. Because they were no mean weight.
Do you remember who was in charge at Henley?
I don't really know. No, I can't remember.
Then you said that you went to Peterborough, to Milton
Hall. Yeah.
What happened to you there?
Well, we carried out further training there. We did pre-para training. And we did weapons of the German army, from rifles right up to 20mm machine guns. And we had a Czech officer there, used to be instructed in those. And we did driving, motorbikes, cars, trucks. And of course we did radio as well.
Any incidents that happened to you there that you recollect?
Well, we weren't allowed out there. They wouldn't allow us out for security reasons. And it was funny, really, because after about a month, people really wound up with not going out. And one Sunday, somebody came out and started firing at the insulation pots on the buildings with pistols. And within about 10 minutes, everybody was firing at insulation pots with carbines and pistols. Quite funny, really. A bit dangerous.
Were you punished for it?
Well, they couldn't punish everybody. They did let us go out after that, provided we were very circumspect.
Could you have pulled out at any time you wanted to?
Yes, you could have done.
Did it ever cross your mind?
Not really, no, I enjoyed it.
Did you think the training that you got there was adequate, or did you have any criticism?
I thought it was quite good, overall. I don't think they could have improved on it, really.
How long a course was that?
It was about 5 or 6 months. And it was 8 in the morning till about 6 at night, so it was quite a hard, involved course.
Were any people discarded as unsuitable?
I can't remember now. It's a long time ago. It was 1943. That was 45 years ago. I can't really remember. There's one chap called Black, Johnny Black, who, after he came back from France, had a violent nightmare and shot himself in the leg. Because I woke up one morning about 4 o'clock and I heard this bang, and of course recognised immediately it was a shot, and jumped out of bed. And I looked around the room, and Black was lying in bed with a 45 pistol in his hand, still asleep. He shot himself in the thigh here.
Where was this?
In Milton Hall, Peterborough. And he'd had a nightmare. He didn't remember anything about it. We got him off to hospital. I've never seen him since that day. Yeah.
What was morale like amongst the rest of your comrades at Milton
Hall? It was pretty high. It was pretty high. They're all eager to get going and have a crack at the jerry, and morale was very, very high.
Were they of all different nationalities?
Yes, we had a detachment of Americans from OSS. We had about 60 Americans. They came from the Office of Strategic Services, and they trained alongside us. And we had a few Belgians and a few Dutchmen. They were getting ready to drop into Belgium and Holland.
What impression did the OSS people make on you?
Very good, really. We worked very, very well together. You know, they used to go out with each other at night time. And we particularly liked the rations because we were on American food. So we got Kentucky fried chicken twice a week and steak twice a week. And we also got PX cards. You know what a PX card is?
PX card?
Yeah.
No?
Well, it was a ration card for the NAFI, the American PX. And we got 200 cigarettes a week at thrips a packet. And we got chocolates. You could buy fountain pens and sunglasses and goodness knows what. All very, very cheap. So we used to take advantage of all that.
Do you remember what they told you about precautions you had to take as regards security once you got to France?
Oh yeah, well that was all part of the course.
Can you tell me some of the things they said?
Well, if you went into a cafe for a meal and you had soup, always put the bowl towards you, not away from you like we do in England. You know, in England they tilt the bowl up and that way.
Yes.
In France you do that.
Tilt it towards you.
Yeah. And we had to be careful of your radios. Like, radio security was very, very difficult. Because the Germans had DFing gear, direction finding gear, and they had, they could sort of set up a vehicle here and they could get the line on a, and then they get another one here, and where the two lines crossed was the area which you were transmitting from. So the security on the radios was very, very high.
What other things did you have to beware of through showing up that you were an Englishman and not a Frenchman in the way in which you behaved?
Well, keep as quiet as you can and don't be too extreme in any of your actions or words or deeds.
Were you tested at all with mock Gestapo interrogations?
No, they didn't do any of that. Just relied upon your innate good sense to... Because if you were captured, you'd have to be very, very careful indeed.
What were you told about talking if you were captured?
Name, rank, number.
Did they give you any advice if third degree methods were used?
Well, they gave you some ideas of what they might try on the interrogation. Ranging from the quietly insidious type to the real, you know, have a go at your type. A hard interview, you know, with some physical torture involved.
Did that frighten you off at all?
I never thought I'd get captured, so it didn't really bother me. I just watched my back and made sure that I didn't get captured.
Did you at that time speak any French?
Yeah, I spoke quite a bit of French, yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah.
Would you have been able to pass as a Frenchman?
Not really, no. Not under interrogation.
Did you form a team at Milton Hall?
Yes, we did. There was Paul Charon and Chris Blaithwaite. We were the team. And we operated together. We dropped in together.
How was the team formed?
Well, I don't know if they formed it. I was just sent along one day and introduced to Chris and Paul, and the idea was to give you about a fortnight together. And if you managed to survive the fortnight, you know, there was no sort of personality problems, you were all right.
Were there any personality problems amongst you?
Not the three of us, no. We were very good friends. I saw Chris quite a few times before he died.
What was his character like?
Quite good, really. He was a chartered accountant in after. I saw Paul quite a few times before he died. He has a had an estate down at Dax near southwest France, and used to go down there periodically. In fact, with being an ex-French soldier wounded, he had a special pass in Paris, which entitled him to travel on all buses free, and 50% off airfares and railfares. So although Paul had a car in Paris, he didn't use it because it wasn't worth it. It cost him money. Because he used to use his bus pass for knocking around.
How do you spell Charon?
C-H-A-R-R-O-N. That was his wartime nom de guerre. His real name was Caron de la Carrière.
How do you spell that?
Caron, C-A-R-O-N. De, D-E-L-A. C-A-R-R-E-R-E.
So this was called a Jedra team?
A Jed team, yeah.
Did they use that term, Jedra, whilst you were at Milton Hall?
Yeah, we're all called Jeds. We all knew we were Jeds.
And what was the objective of the Jedra teams? What were they supposed to do?
Well, they were supposed to drop into enemy occupied territories and to collect information and to organise parachute drops and arm as many people as you could do, ready for the open resistance. Then when he got the signal from London, he came out in open rebellion against the Germans.
Did you have a cover name?
Gilbert. Gilbert Gilbert.
What was your full name that's supposed to be as a Frenchman?
Jean, J-E-A-N, Jean Gilbert.
What was your job and identity?
Oh, just a workman, really. Because I was only 20.
What were the preparations you had for going into France?
Well, the training was the preparation.
In terms of assembling the equipment and so on?
Huh?
In terms of assembling your equipment and so on?
Well, you knew your equipment because you've been training on it. So you knew how to put that together.
Did you go in armed?
Yes. You had a Remington carbine. Quick loading carbine, quick firing carbine, and a Colt automatic pistol.
Were you in uniform?
Yeah, initially, yeah.
Just an ordinary tank corps uniform?
Yeah.
What rank did you hold then?
Sergeant.
So you had sergeant stripes?
Yeah.
And the other two were in uniform?
Yeah. But Paul wore his kepi. And Chris wore his green royal, what was it? He wore a green beret. What was it?
Commando?
Pardon?
Commando?
No.
Royal Rifle Corps?
King's Royal Rifle Corps. Yeah.
Can you tell me about going into France in detail?
Well, we took off from a place not far from Cambridge. And we took off with an American plane. It was a Liberator. And the funny thing is, about 8 or 9 years ago, my son lives just outside Cambridge, and my wife and I were down there, we were sort of meandering around in the car, and I said, we flew into France from somewhere around here. We went round the corner, and there's a signpost there, and it told us the name of the place, and that was it.
Was this Tempsford?
Tempsford, yeah. How do you know that?
I've interview people who flew from there.
Yeah, we flew around the corner. There's a signpost at Tempsford. And there was still like one or two buildings there. One was part of a pig farm and that. And we flew into Brittany. We landed about 1 o'clock in the morning.
This was after D-Day, was it?
And this was a rotten drop. Because instead of dropping us and then the containers, they dropped the containers and us together. And Paul got hit with one of the containers, and I got brushed with one. And it was a bit of a funny drop, really. And just after we got on the ground, the two German trucks came rolling up, and they spread out looking for us. We went into a cornfield and hid till the next morning and got away. And next day we contacted some French people. They brought some horrible coffee along. And then we started from there building up our resistance groups.
Had Paul Charon been injured by the collision?
No, he wasn't injured. But Blaithwaite was just bumped and bruised with it.
How many days after D-Day was this?
I can't remember now.
Soon after D-Day?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was the name of the place where you dropped?
Scare, S-C-A-E-R, Scare. That's about 10 miles north of Quimper.
And was it in the right place?
Well, it's a blind drop, so it must have been. It's a blind drop, is it? Blind drop is when you go in and there's no organised party to greet you. You just drop in blind. But,
can you describe how you first met the French resistance people?
Yeah, we had a meeting and shook hands and had drinks and discussed what was going to happen. And we agreed to bring in as many planes as we could get in. So we got the map coordinates of a few fields nearby and arranged parachute drops. About 3 planes. We also had to organise horses and carts because there were no vehicles about. Because you wanted to, when you got the planes came in, you had to get the containers and that away as quickly as possible. So we had to put them in farm carts and gallop off during the night. So we spent a few weeks getting lots of arms in. And stashing them all over the place. We even had one lot in the town hall in Camper.
How did you manage that?
In the cellars. Well, they were smuggled in the cellars. And the Germans were forced to find them.
The Germans did find them?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I was in Camper one day in the back of a small truck. And there's a German army policeman in front, and he stopped all the vehicles. And there's the sounds of martial music, and a German army regiment came marching by, all singing away there, which was quite funny, really.